Here and still morning, so good morning. Did you drive in this morning from Worthington? Or?
Actually, last night.
Last night?
Downtown.
Very good. Well, we'll ask for an opening statement from you, and if you have any questions, but then after your opening statement, then we'll open it up to questions from the council. And when we've got about 5 minutes left of our allotted time, we'll call it, and you can finish with any closing statement as well. But again, thank you for applying and your interest with this. So, floor is yours. Are any questions first?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead. Again, my name is Randy Simonson, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here today. My wife, Susan, and our family have had a close connection to the University of Minnesota for many years. We recognize and value the importance of this institution to our lives, to our neighbors across Minnesota and beyond. I earned a Ph.D. here. Our son, Josh, earned a Master's in Public Health. He did a M.D. and did his radiology residency here, and he currently is an assistant professor in the department while he works at the VA as a radiologist. Our daughter, Anna, did her undergraduate work here in history. She's currently a Ph.D. candidate in New York, but she did her undergraduate here. I have served and currently serve on a number of advisory boards. For example, the College of Veterinary Medicine on the Dean's Advisory Board. I serve on the L. Lehman Endowed Chair Committee, and I've been on a number of other ones in the past. And my wife and I have had the privilege of helping to fund a scholarship in honor of my major professor, Dr. Sam Maheshwaran. So I'm here today because I care about the University of Minnesota. I was told by the council that you wish to hear know specifically how I would make a significant difference to the continued success of the university and what my qualifications to do that might be. So I'd like to look at five important issues that I think are confronting the university today and how my qualifications and background can contribute to addressing these. The first is affordable education, especially at the graduate level. Higher education is challenged to find ways to continue operating in a cost-effective manner. Holding the line on tuition and attracting the best students has been and will be an ongoing challenge to the university. I applaud President Kaler's efforts to keep resident undergraduate tuition flat this fiscal year 15, and I think before that as well, and only modest increases for non-residents, graduate programs, and the professional schools. This, however, may require some very different and difficult choices with regards to how we organize, how we operate, and ultimately how we budget in the future. My 30-plus years in experience in private industry have given me many opportunities to review, refine, and fund plans that consider the reality of the times that we live in. Second point, funding for research and applying the resulting technology. We know research dollars are getting more competitive and difficult to obtain. Federal funds are flat to declining. State monies are down as are funds from nonprofit organizations. This has led faculty researchers to rely more and more on for-profit companies to fill that void. I believe this is a trend that will continue for a long time and has provided some special challenges to the university in terms of professionalism, ethics, and out-licensing. I have worked for years with researchers at the University of Minnesota and universities around the world, and I've witnessed good and bad outcomes from these relationships. And this experience has given me an understanding of how the university must recognize and deal with this issue in the future. Third point, economic development. The University of Minnesota has a responsibility to educate and discover, but along with that, this great institution plays a major role in the economic well-being of our people. I believe that the economic well-being of the University of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota are joined at the hip. We have done a good job, but we can improve. Working together with state government, Minnesota private industry and trade organizations, the university can and must remain a leader in promoting economic development in Minnesota. I have worked on a number of regional economic development committees searching for ways to provide jobs and enhance the quality of life of our citizens. This work has involved city, county, and state government, as well as representation from MinSCU system and the University of Minnesota. I have deep interest in these programs being expanded for the betterment of our citizens. Fourth point, maintaining and focusing our mandate on the land-grant university. Our charter, given to us in 1851, state in part that this university is to provide the inhabitants of this territory with the means to acquire knowledge in literature, science, and arts. We do that, but as the world has become smaller, it's easy to lose sight of that obligation. I've spent the last 2 decades plus working in rural Minnesota and with agriculture. I understand the needs and the importance of the University of Minnesota to helping meet those these needs for Minnesota. Fifth point is the demographics of our state have changed considerably in recent years. Worthington, for example, the majority of the students in the primary schools are English second language. We have something like over 50 different dialects in our little town of 11,000. So diversity is a big difference. And along with this comes cultural differences with personal history that impact goals and dreams, if you will. And I've worked as a volunteer. I've worked as a volunteer with people from many different cultures, many people that have had made poor choices resulting in legal problems, but when given help to visualize the possibilities, have turned their lives around. I believe that the University of Minnesota, working, for example, through Extension and other programs, can provide assistance in this area. My personal testimony gives support to the fact that education provides hope for the hopeless. So I leave it to you to decide if my qualifications are worthy of going to the next stage in this process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Paul has asked to be the first question.
Mr. Simonson,
yes.
Of your 5 points, the first was affordability. Yes. You specifically mentioned graduate programs. I know DVMs. I've never been one myself, but I would imagine a challenge in delivering a world-class graduate education is the cost of acquiring the patients with which the students will work. And so you've served on the doctor of veterinary medicine advisory board. How have you, as board advisors, dealt with the challenges of the increasing cost of graduate education in your field?
Well, we look at the various programs. One of the things that I always I talk about maybe a couple of different things. One is the we can't be everything to everybody. And we need to look at working with other institutions as well in certain areas, and that's an important part. Second part is when I mentioned about research dollars and stuff, most of my experience goes to the veterinary college and some of the issues there. Years and years ago, I talked to a person that was head of the research dean at the time about looking for ways to other than private monies for helping with research. As far as the cost of education, especially at the vet school, I mean, to see them get out of vet school with $150,000 in debt and start a job with $50,000 a year salary, yeah, it's a problem.
Thank you. Harriet.
You want to follow
up? I'll just tag on to that. You mentioned dealing with the cost, and, you know, the university, in cooperation with the legislature, has been able to keep tuition flat for the last couple of years. And I think one of the considerations is that, is this a way that we can keep this university operating long term? I'm of the opinion that some other methods of getting revenue, getting resources to operate the university. I like your ideas on where might you get those alternative sources of revenue.
There are different ways to look at this. My daughter, being a graduate student, has a lot of opinions. She's always talking to me about things like this. She's talking about things like, and she's in the humanities, crowdfunding. I don't think that's necessarily a good way, but a lot of universities are looking at that, especially in the humanities, but it's been used in the sciences. I'm more interested in looking at how we can focus again on the science side of it, how we can use our incubator labs in a better way, how we can perhaps use novel ways of funding, maybe venture funding. I just started a new company last year. We're in a Series A funding. And I don't know why something like that couldn't work better for the university. I also believe I've been very vocal about, I think the university lets go of its technology way too early. They don't get the real return on the value that they could get if they take it to another step or two. And so I think looking at that type of scenario where they could get more return on their technology could also result in dollars to the university.
Thank you.
Very good. Harriet?
Thank you. Now, right at 4 o'clock.
If my phone does this. Honestly, I'm so bizarre. Okay. I see it at home, too. There's a little person in there trying to get out. Ms. Kerr, Mr. Simonson. We all have strengths and weaknesses. And I am curious to know how you have been told, what have people told you let me try that again. What have people told you is your greatest weakness or area where you can improve? Do you agree with that? And if not, what do you believe it is?
You know, I've had the good fortune of being involved, again, in private industry for a number of years. I've been part of starting a couple of different animal health companies and selling those companies, and I just started my third in 2014. The successes that I've had are the result of really being surrounded by good people. They're not mine. I tend to look at things in a broad way. I'm very customer-oriented. I'm very employee-oriented. I'm technical by training, but I've been told, you know, the details I'm not the best at. I can skim through stuff pretty fast. Crossing T's and dotting I's aren't one of my strong suits, but I've always had somebody around me to help me do that. I don't know at my age if I'm going to improve on that, but I definitely will always try to have people around me to help me in that effort.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, I agree. I know that. I know my strengths rely more on the bigger picture, looking at the opportunities, and getting good people to help me with the details.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There's a follow-up question.
A follow-up. You mentioned the word age, and I'm first going to give a public testimony, and then I'm going to ask you the question. I'm 72. Mm-hmm. Joey asked me why I wasn't applying for the 3rd Congressional District seat. Mm-hmm. And I said when I added up the years with 72, I thought that was too old to serve. Mm-hmm. So I'm asking you a question, point blank. How do you respond to what's on my mind?
I'm 68 years old, and we sold our last company in 2012 to a large French company, Sanofi. I had to stay on. They wouldn't buy it if I didn't stay on for a period of time, but it was going to be about 5 years. After about 2 years, the cultural difference was just too much for me. I'm an entrepreneur. And that large corporate thing, so I asked for a replacement. That's the way it is. Sorry.
Very typical.
That large corporate environment just wasn't for me, so I asked them to bring somebody in that I could help transition in to take care of the company. They did. They brought a very qualified person in, and so my time there wasn't really needed as much as I thought it would be. So I took about the last 4 or 5 months of 2013 and said, what am I going to do? I spent a lot of time over at my Lanesboro place, fly fishing, reading books, thinking, what am I going to do? Should I retire? I've got a lot of hobbies. I ride horses. I've got dogs. I love all that kind of stuff. So I don't have a lack in that area. But I realized that if I step out of this, I can't step back in. I enjoy the industry. I enjoy the animal health industry. I've got contacts all around the world, very close contacts. I enjoy working again with the University of Minnesota. I have good contacts there. And so I decided that I'm not going to sit home and read the paper in the morning.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I follow up on that? Because
sure.
I think Margaret's question was, we generally look for, there's a six-year term that you're applying for, but if you're a successful regent, we think that experience is valuable to stay on. That means that's a 12-year term and takes you to age 80. So I think that's the point of her question, if you will.
It was.
Okay, I'm sorry. Old was Ronald Reagan when he finished.
That's not the analogy we want to use. No, but I think he did answer to my satisfaction. He is determined that he's going to be in this milieu, whether it's that chair or somewhere else.
Well, 68 is very young. We all understand that.
Good.
Pat. Thank you. You've done a great job of answering some questions. I'm glad you touched on your entrepreneurial side. I think that's the technology, the innovation that you've demonstrated with what I'm reading through your resume. I don't personally know that. But I wish you would share with our group. I want to probe the width of your knowledge. I certainly appreciate the width of your service. The Project Morningstar sounds great, Worthington Foundation. I read those as things that you did not because you had to for your job, but because you had a passion or a reason to serve or to do something great there. But could you share with us a little bit so that we understand? We just finished an interview with a very, very impressive doctor, a medical doctor. But could you share with us, as a DVM, maybe the potential parallels between human health and some of the conflict in your ability as a potential regent or sitting regent to talk about issues at the medical school? Are there dots that can be connected between being a DVM and training, between your background in developing companies? And maybe you could just briefly touch on what those companies actually did or the products that they made.
Sure, absolutely. By the way, I'm not a DVM. I'm a PhD in veterinary microbiology. I did go to the vet school. But worked in the field for a long time. A new program, One Science, I think is what it's called. They had a big seminar here last year at the vet school, and it actually goes straight to that point. Technologies cross over very nicely. I started my career actually, it was a second company that I was with that also had a human health side to it. I've always thought that we could use the sciences back and forth. Unfortunately, in the commercial world, that didn't always work very well for a whole bunch of reasons. But from a technical standpoint and from a university standpoint, absolutely. I think we can use our technologies and communicate a lot better between the medical school and the veterinary school, engineering, other programs as well. So I do think there's definite overlaps. And this One Medicine or One Science program, I think, is good.
Margaret, did you have a question besides that follow-up?
No, but I have to endorse what you said. It's called One Health in California. No, I mean, everybody's got it. Yeah. It's the future issue, the continuum from animal, environment, human health, seamless. No, I'm just nodding.
Okay, gotcha. Good. Lois.
Tagging on Pat and the entrepreneurial emphasis. You're in greater Minnesota, home turf for me as well. So the potential is there for big fish in small pond, if you would like to say, which sounds negative. But the other part of that is big fish in small town has tremendous respect, in small pond, has tremendous respect to be able to help others view situations through new lenses. So could you help bring us up to speed on things that you, as a unique and successful entrepreneur in your southwestern area, the connections, the efforts that you've tried to advance to enhance entrepreneurial lenses and innovation lenses?
I've served on committees with the Worthington Regional Economic Development Commission. If you may or may not know, in Worthington we have a biotech. They call it a biotech corridor north of the freeway there. I've been involved with that. My new company, we actually are occupying, we're renting space in what's called the BAC, Biotechnology Advancement Center, so we've rent some office space in there. I'm working very hard to get them to finish out the laboratory that would be city-owned, but multi-purpose use where we can use help with. In my career, many, many times I've had people come to me with one technology, one idea, and they don't know how to take it to another step. I think there's opportunities to do that even in a small town like Worthington, where we can have a incubator laboratory again. So I've worked very close there. I currently work on that laboratory project. I think those kinds of things are possible. I've also, again, with our changing demographics, I've had the privilege of bringing a lot of people into our company. The company we just sold wasn't huge. We had about 140 employees, but I had the opportunity of bringing a lot of English second language people in, helping them get their education or training them on the job type training. It's been a big privilege. I've helped people get their green cards. I've had the privilege of helping people get their citizenship. And so all that lends to economic development.
Follow up if I could.
Sure.
How much have you reached to SMSU, to South Dakota State? Well, you could throw SMSU into the mix as well, and into Iowa as you've done your work. Mm-hmm.
SDSU, I served for a while as an adjunct position there. I had a couple of people go there when most recently the head of my previous diagnostic lab, did his PhD. He got his PhD while working. We supported him. I've had several people go to SDSU for continued training. Iowa State, I've worked very closely with Iowa State, research projects and so on and so forth.
Thank you.
I've been to the International Bio Conference in Worthington. Is usually a part of the Minnesota Pavilion. Have you gone to that with the group that comes from Worthington?
To the biotech in Worthington, that one is that.
No, well, the EDA that comes to the International Bio Conference. That's last year was in San Diego.
Yeah, I have not gone to that. Representative from the parent company, the company I just started, is in San Carlos, and they were there, and so I've got feedback.
Always there. Good. Yeah. Thanks. Harriet.
Sure. I actually have two questions. The first one is just a yes-no question for my own curiosity. Are you currently doing anything with the Carlson's Entrepreneurial Studies program?
Oh, actually, a couple of companies ago, I got into their MBA program for people like me, and so I got into it, but I got too busy, and I dropped out.
I'm
not doing anything with it.
So are you working with any students in the entrepreneurial program or mentoring?
No, I'm not.
In that area?
No, I'm not. But I think that's an excellent point. I think there is plenty of opportunity to do that, even at the university level here, for some of the things that I'm talking about. It could be a graduate level work, how we could some of these programs I'm talking about, or even on another area, sports. Some universities have this independent cable network and television. Maybe students from the Carlson could do a market research on that type of thing. Is that something we could look at for added income? Is that something that and they could look at a management program for something like that? I don't know. I'm throwing some of these things out there, but
I was really asking more specifically about whether you were involved from a volunteer standpoint.
No, I'm not. No.
Oh, it's a phenomenal program and would be a great place for you to really add some value, I think. You are a very busy person, and you are starting a new company. How much time would you really have to devote to this, given the fact that you're starting a company at the same time? Are you leading the other company from a hands-on approach, or are you more the visionary and others are executing? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm the president and CEO of this new company called Gray Six Animal Health. Actually, we're starting another one. In addition to them, looking at buying a lab, another laboratory. But like I said earlier, I get good people. And so I've got good people working for me. And so I basically help set the course. I was just in conversations last night with I've got a business development director that's taken over Asia for me. And so my said, okay, give me the plan. Just let me see it, blah, blah, blah. And so I've been successful because I have good people. In the company I recently sold, I didn't have to show up most of the time. It was that way. People knew, they thought they owned the place, and it was good. I like that.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up. Does anybody else, do you understand how many hours it takes to be a regent, particularly driving from where you drive from? Because you remember Mary Page was from that area and Chuck McQuiggan, and, you know, we can, it's a lot of hours. And the thing the regents don't want, I'm going to make a public statement and then finish this, is only a few of the regents show up at graduation or at the Alumni Legislative Forum or at the foundation meeting. You know, being absent of those type of ceremonial things is not a good thing. So I want to address the time now more than age.
Okay. I've thought about that. Actually, I mentioned that on the application. I think I'm aware of the time required. I know there's only a couple of days meetings a week, but I know there'd be a lot of prep time in getting ready for those meetings. But even on the other things like you're talking about, I was planning to go to the bowl game down in Florida, and something interfered with that. But those, you know, being a regent, I understand that responsibility. And on my application, this would receive a high priority for me, given previous warning of what those dates are. And if something came up in a hurry, again, this would be a priority for me. The businesses I've started, again, I spend much of my time just in my home office without having to go to the other office and get things going. I've got good people. And we're growing that business. We're doing, like I said, a Series A funding, so I get involved in that type of thing. But it's not about me at the end of the day.
Okay, but I need to
I understand.
A caution to you. This is not a resume builder, which you don't want or need at this point. But I do lament the lapsed regents that I've seen through the years.
Yeah. Again, as I said in my opening statement, the university has been very good to me. Mm-hmm. It's my time in life to pay back.
Okay.
Whether it's the Manage Star project or some of these other things, it's my time in life. That doesn't mean I can't be doing some of these other things.
I agree.
The other things that I'm doing, the Morningstar project, they take money. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a lot of the stuff I'm doing here at these other businesses is to use that money, scholarship type thing. I told my Sam Mahesh, one of my major professor, I can name on one hand the number of people that have made a significant contribution to my life as a mentor or what have you, Sam being one of them. Okay. It's time for me to pay back. So starting this scholarship with nothing for me. And being a regent on the university, yes, it's a great honor. But I recognize the responsibility that will go with it as well.
All right. Good answer. But I was going to not let you off without pressing.
I appreciate that.
Good.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to salute entrepreneurs personally. I think they're a huge economic engine and a creation source for new jobs in the state. I also see a parallel between educational research and entrepreneurism. Educational research finds holes in knowledge, plugs them. Entrepreneurs find holes in the market and new products, services, and solutions to plug those as well. So at first, I want to salute that, and thank you for being an entrepreneur. But one thing I've noticed about most entrepreneurs, I was one myself, they're generally doers that really like to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty and get down into intricate details. whereas governance usually goes to policy long-term issues. I'm just asking about you, your personality, and what you are drawn to on a daily basis when all the issues of the world present themselves to you as an entrepreneur.
Well, patience is probably not a big part of my attribute. I like to get things done, especially if it looks like there's a clear pathway for doing that, but I do understand the political process, if you will. I think I understand that the regions are here to provide a lot of oversight and accountability, that type of thing, and working closely with the administration, President Kaler, and all that type of thing. I understand that we are to do his job for him. I appreciate that, but also I feel that I can bring education again to me. It's made a big difference in my life. I was the first person in my family to go to college. I barely got out of high school. I was lucky to go to college. I was not a good student to begin with, but it changed my life. Some of the people I'm working with in some of these other programs, at the same time, as far as patients, I've seen changes in their lives. And a lot of that has to do with education. And so as far as my patience and working the process, I think I can do that. I don't know if an example, maybe another example of that is I work closely with the drug court in Worthington and deal with a lot of people that have some bad records. In that process, they end up with targets on their back. It's almost like police harassment in some cases. Now, am I going to go out there and no? But I think I can find a process to help educate people how to handle that in a better way. I can be patient with that kind of thing. I don't know if that answers your question.
Sonia.
You've talked about changing demographics. And over the past several days, we have been talking and hearing from other people talk about a younger population that is dramatically different from the way many of us were educated and the way many of us live. Students are incredibly involved with new technologies. Many of them major in two or three or how many different degrees. We've heard younger people being less committed to their institution here and other places. We hear about young people who keep jobs for a shorter amount of time in order to keep going up and up and up. How would you, as a regent, grow your understanding and help the university as a body grow its understanding of how to attract, how to educate, how to really meet the needs of a younger and very different and in quite an exciting population of people?
That's a good question. I firmly believe that will be a minority in the future, especially as I look around places like Worthington, and that's fine with me. But reaching these people that come from a different culture and showing them a pathway, because a lot of the people, as I've gotten to know them, can't see that path. And so I'm thinking, like from the university standpoint, again, the extension. The extension shares an office in the BAC building where I'm at, so I interact with them a bit. And how extension can reach out to these folks and help them see a better pathway to a future that doesn't just involve necessarily having to go to work at a factory or selling drugs, for example. And so I think the university can play a role in that. I don't know if I'm seeing that clear to you.
So move beyond the kind of person that you've referred to and think about a broad range of students who appear to be very different. This generation and generations to follow who will be even more so. I worry about the Regents and I worry about the university as a whole
really grasping that and then developing policies and programs that are relevant. How do you enhance your understanding and analysis and then sense of strategic changes that the university has to take?
Good question. I'm thinking along the lines of why I went to school to begin with, why I went to college, okay? For me, a lot of it was vocationally oriented, and I think that's fairly common. But I think it goes, education is so much more than that. I have a quote from my daughter. I said, "Yeah, give me something on the arts and how important the arts are." And I think this goes to your point. And I said, "Give me a quote." She says, "Even though she comes from a science family and her brother's scientist, her mom's a registered nurse, all that, humanities have the great privilege of helping students understand themselves in greater depth by unearthing their histories, their religions, and their stories within a broader context and in an environment where they are free to ask questions and challenge assumptions." If I add to that things like democracy versus other forms of government, free enterprise, capitalism, free speech, freedom of religion, those types of things that contribute to the whole society. How can the university contribute to that through education in the broader sense? It's not, I was reading something else where we've gone from a subsidized program for the public good to a competitive program for the market good. We can't allow that to happen as a university of Minnesota, in my opinion. We've got to be well-rounded and help our people grow in all areas. That way. I don't know if that's
a good question. Thank you.
Maybe not.
Good. Harriet.
I'd actually just like to ask you to expand on what you just said and explain that a little bit further. The comment about for the market good versus...
It's actually a quote I read a while back. My daughter gave me a bunch of stuff because she's very interested, in especially seeing what's happening to the arts and so on and so forth. And the quote is that we cross the line in higher education being a subsidized public good to a higher education as a competitive market good. And the point being that we need to develop more of a business model in how we handle this. Look at P&L and put a focus on P&L, profit and loss type of an approach. And my thought as I got thinking about that is yes and no. We need attention to income versus expense, but the University of Minnesota is so much more than a business. Okay, it's like I was saying, it's this... our mandate is knowledge, literature, and science. It's not just business. It's some of these other things, teaching people the quality of life with some of these other things that I said. A while back, some of you probably are aware of Professor Van Dassel. Can't say it. She was my daughter. I have a lot of respect for her. She spoke at a Regents Open Forum on the support of liberal arts and how important that is to quality of life and to our society as a whole. And so I'm very passionate that way as well, that we aren't operating a business at the university, albeit we've got to be aware, and we can't be everything to everybody. You know, merging departments, partnering with other institutions, those kind of, I'm very much for that, so from a business model that way, but not at the expense of real education.
Thank you. Yeah.
I can just follow up on that. I'm on the Minnesota State Arts Board, and you just talked about a quote, and I'm just wondering if you believe that yourself. But there is a trend that humanities are not seen as important and therefore not required for all students. And if it is, it's offered in a more on appreciation courses rather than courses with rigor. So given the quote, do you believe that or what role do you think the University of Minnesota plays with having humanities for all students?
Well, again, if there's a program that has, it's got five students or something, maybe we could partner. I'm talking a humanities program. Partner with another college. Maybe we can partner with Minsky or something to bring that in rather than have a full staff in there for that type of thing. But I think it's important to bring these things out and let people do it. Again, I'll use my wife is a cellist, okay? And I used to think that a note was something I'd write and tell her what I think about it until I studied music, okay, because she's a cellist. And now I study with classical in the back row, Okay, that kind of. So I think it's important to a well-rounded education.
There are sharp and flat notes too. Lois.
Mr. Brady asked a question about your entrepreneurial doer capacity. I would like to posit something. You said that you are the visioner and the reviewer and the good people person. Board of Regents is, as people have said, an oversight circumstance. But they are critically charged with looking around the corner. And I would say that you are, by your life history, someone who looks around the corner. And you have not had trajectories with your companies that all went straight uphill. So you needed to do a considerable amount of readjusting. And that mandated asking the right questions when things showed up. To me, that correlates very strongly with what an entrepreneurial mindset can bring to the Board of Regents and the University of Minnesota. I would like to ask if I just correctly described the way in which you operate.
Yeah, I think so. Like you said, our businesses, we've had this kind of thing. Here in my life of 2001, the USDA came down and shut us down, and I had that time about 50 employees that needed to put a paycheck. How are we going to get through this? No income for 3 months. And so we found a way to adapt to those types of things, and we came out stronger than ever. We got shut down for paperwork. We weren't doing a good job of going too fast. Issues that were in the press recently at the med school, I think his name was Professor Elliott, dealing with things like tenure and academic freedom versus ethics and so on and so forth. I hate to see that stuff in the press. I would really push harder for getting the facts out. Are we dealing with opinions here, or are we dealing with facts? And rather than explode it into the press, which doesn't do anything.
I think a very hands-on entrepreneur can simultaneously be a policy and governance person, and that's what I was kind of trying to get at.
If I were on the Regents now, and that article came out, I can't remember, a couple weeks ago or something like that, I would really push, let's get to the bottom of this thing. Let's not make this a public spectacle for the university. Let's find out what's true here. And I think it goes beyond tenure and academic freedom. Is there facts behind this, not just opinions?
Very good. Jerry, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was intrigued when Harry asked you the question about you commented, we can't be everything to everybody, and you've said that a couple times today. The mission of the university is to educate, do research, and do outreach. It's a land-grant university, and what is your view as to at what point, as a Board of Regents, do they not do everything for the entire state with whatever comes forward to be requested of them?
Yeah, maybe an example of that is Iowa State, and again, I've worked with them at the veterinary school at Iowa State. They have formed an alliance with several other institutions where they don't have their internal strengths. They can send students back and forth for this type of thing. They don't have to have everything right here and have all the expense that goes with that. They can move their people around. That's probably an example. We could say the same things in the arts. Some language. We may have somebody that really wants to study Chinese. I don't know what we have a program on that here. I don't know how many students are interested in it, but maybe another institution has a bigger program with that. We can send them down there for part of that education. So I don't know if that answers you, Mr. Rogers, or not, but that's what I think we need to look at those kinds of things more closely.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask one more question, if
okay.
I could. I'm very impressed with your resume, and I think you're a very strong candidate, but I'd like to give you a chance to answer a troubling issue that I find in your resume. You have three references listed instead of four, and you did not list as references the two supervisors that were active in your recent Mr. Hung and Mr. Freeze. And I would, that blinks to me as a why would might that not they not be used as references?
I did have four references. That goes to my dotting I's and crossing T's. My administrative assistant filled that out and sent it in for me. She left the one off.
Okay.
I did call in the other one, and he was also interviewed.
Okay.
I tried to pick references. Mark Freeze and, or excuse me, Wayne Freeze and I was just talking to him this morning. We're going together on this lab that we're talking about buying together. We still have some other businesses together that we work in. I'm more passive. He's more active. I tried to pick references in four areas. I tried to pick a reference from the University of Minnesota. So I picked Russ Bay, who's retired from here, and how we work together. I tried to pick somebody in business, and I debated about it could have been Wayne. And I picked Dr. Mark Titus, who you don't see on there, who I worked very closely with. He's a veterinarian graduate. Me and I've worked together for over 20 years. I tried to pick somebody that could deal with the ethics and personal part of it. I picked Pastor Gilbert Beckerman. And I tried to pick somebody that understood how I worked in the community as a volunteer, if you will. And so I picked somebody from the drug court in Southwest Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, they all are in the book.
Yes, they are.
Okay. I looked at them. Sorry, I looked at the list, not the book. My apologies.
It's true. They're there. Well, any closing comments or statement?
No, I appreciate the opportunity again, and your comment. I thought a lot about that.
Thank you.
I've talked to my wife a lot about it. I've talked to my kids. I've talked to my colleagues before I made this decision, and I'm willing to give it to you. I also talked to my business partners in the business I just started with the parent company here in San Carlos, and they all encouraged me to do it.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.